As discussed in the earlier segment, leaving one's homeland for a new life elsewhere is rarely easy, and much less so at some times than others. This is one of those times for refugees and immigrants from the Muslim world. The president's executive order may remind some of 1939, when this country put up a stop sign and hundreds of German Jews were refused entry as the war in Europe and the Holocaust were unfolding. The story is chilling and is being told in a 21st century format via Twitter. The account is STL Manifest. Its co-creator is St. Louisan Russell Neese. Russell, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Don.
Set this up for us, set the stage for us, if you will, for this story.
Sure. So in 1939, so this is before the Nazi genocide to try to literally annihilate world Jewry, but after the events of 1938 Kristallnacht, so we have violence already occurring against Jews. A group of 937 refugees left the port of Hamburg in Germany on their way to Havana, Cuba, with the intent in staying just very shortly before they would make their way to the United States. The vast majority of them had already filed paperwork for visas for the U.S. and had transit documents waiting for them in Havana, so they'd be able to stay and wait till these documents came. And unbeknownst to them, on the way to Havana, Cuba, their documents were pulled, and they were basically stranded at sea. And so they attempted to get – sorry.
No, go ahead.
They attempted to sail from Havana to the port of Miami. They saw the lights of Miami, were eventually forbid access to them, turned around, and approximately half of the refugees who were resettled back in mainland Europe perished during the Nazi occupation and throughout the Holocaust thereafter.
It was a perfect storm of events, as I understand it, because there was an anti-Semitism flurry in Havana at about the time they were scheduled to arrive, and that was not helpful.
Yeah, that's correct. That's part of it. So this is also after the Spanish Civil War and the Cuban authorities at the time, the Batista regime, had supported the dictator Franco. And the Germans, the part of the Nazi propaganda was that all these Jews were communists. And so in this case, collaborators against the Franco regime. And this sort of pandered not only to the anti-Semitism in Cuba at the time, but in the United States as well.
Okay, we'll tell more of this story in a moment.
Sure.
But let's get to what you're doing with Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, this is certainly a 21st century format for telling this story. Explain to our audience what it is precisely that you're doing.
Sure. So what we happened with late Thursday night, over the course basically of an hour and a half, 2 hours, myself and a partner on this project, Rabbi Charlie Schwartz, we put together what's called a Twitter bot, which is a computer program that essentially automatically tweets. And so this particular Twitter bot tweeted every 5 minutes. And it tweeted a little bit of a miniature story of each of the passengers on the St. Louis who perished during the Holocaust.
And just those who perished?
Just those who perished.
Okay.
Yeah, we worked it out basically. Friday was International Holocaust Remembrance Day. And when you take the number of victims who perished, 254, and you multiply it by 5 minutes, you basically get 21 hours and a little bit more than that. So over the course of International Holocaust Remembrance Day, we tweeted out all of the victims.
How did you compile this information? You've got photographs of the
victims.
We had
photographs of them. We had all the information. And this is all the honor for that goes to the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. Several years ago, researchers there took it upon themselves to find out what happened to all of the 937 passengers on the St. Louis. And so when Charlie and myself on Thursday night decided this would be if we were looking for something to sort of do to commemorate the Holocaust, but also, again, the draft executive order banning refugees was sort of floating around at that point. It was leaked on Wednesday. No one was sure if or when it was coming. And so we were thinking, is there a story from the past that we can tell here? And we settled on the St. Louis for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons also was that just the availability of the documents, thanks to the researchers and the at the Holocaust Museum here in Washington, D.C.
What kind of response have you had from people online?
It's been amazingly, overwhelmingly positive. So on Friday morning, I think it went live, the bot, at about 1 a.m. Central St. Louis time. And when I brought my kids to school Friday morning, it had 77 followers. And I'm like, this is amazing. This is totally blowing up. And by the time I dropped off my kids at school, I had already had 4 inquiries from the Atlantic, the Daily Beast, a couple other mainline publications. And basically, I think if you look at the feed right now, just a couple days later, it's got 77,000 followers. One of the tweets has each of those with tweets retweeted many times. It's been seen by, I think, over 5 million people is what the analytics said sort of last night. So that's beyond the tweets that have been retweeted and the multiple publications, not just in the United States, but internationally as well.
Well, it has special relevance at this particular time, given what's going on and as we were discussing in the first segment.
Yeah, it's again, this project was primarily created as a memorial to the victims of the Holocaust. You know, we weren't the ones who thought it appropriate to sign an executive order banning refugees on International Holocaust Remembrance Day, but I totally understand why it has resonance for people nowadays.
Yeah, I just have to mention that the official proclamation from the government on Holocaust Remembrance Day failed to mention that the victims were Jewish.
That's also true, yeah.
Yeah. Your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of other people have had – I'd say this much, right? It's that the Holocaust – the Nazi war machine had many, many victims. But aside from Jews and the Roma, no one was targeted for annihilation in the attack of genocide. And I think that you can't talk about the Holocaust without acknowledging the special attention that the Nazis took to trying to annihilate an entire race of people.
Let's go back to the story.
Sure.
And I understand you've explained why they were not allowed to stay in Cuba. But what about the U.S.? They passed Miami. They saw the lights as they were sailing by the east coast of the United States.
Right. They were actually interdicted by a Coast Guard cutter to prevent them from landing in the port of Miami. Mm-hmm. And this was the refugees attempted to reach out to President Roosevelt via telegram, to the State Department via telegram, and Roosevelt was silenced, and the State Department basically said they had to wait their turn. At the time, this was the quota system that they were under. There were only about 27,000 Germans who were applicable each year to come in, and several hundred thousand each year. I think in 1939, there was something like 300,000 German Jews who lined up to try to get 27,000 spaces, and they weren't able to come.
Was this a point in our history and in the history of the Third Reich in which it was widely understood what was beginning to happen to the Jewish population?
Yeah, it was. So no, it's the systematic policy of the Nazis attempting their genocide on the Jews had not yet begun in 39. From 1933 till roughly 1941, the German policy with the Jews was actually to try to force them to immigrate, to try to get them to get out. And so from 1933 till 41, there was an opportunity for Jews who, at least in Germany and then in Austria, this is to try to get out. And those with means, many of them did. There were many, many more who wanted to leave who were unable to do so. And in fact, the St. Louis is a particularly interesting story because it ended up being a German propaganda coup that the Germans were saying, well, what do you expect us to do with these people? Nobody else wants them. They've gone to Cuba. They've gone to the United States. They've gone to Canada. And no country would end up taking them in. So in a lot of ways, this story – not only is it a sort of a failure upon us to live up to like our ideals as Americans to sort of welcome people in the desperate times of need, but it was also actually used as a propaganda coup by the Nazis.
Was it sheer anti-Semitism in the part of the United States and Canada and others who would not accept these people?
I mean, it's hard to say, right? It's I'd say there was the time in America there was part of the reason why they didn't want these Jews coming in was they thought them to be a security threat. They were afraid of communism. This was at the time also of when America first got its sort of speaking. So just a couple months before the St. Louis was attempted to land, there was a bill, the Wagner-Rogers bill, I believe, that was trying to let in 20,000 child refugees from Germany. And they also were not allowed in. It was voted down in Congress. One of the opponents of the bill said that 20,000 smiling German children, smiling Jewish children, will end up to be 20,000 ugly adults. So this is sort of the language that's going on at the time.
Boy, well, you know, what you're saying just has, is just ringing the same bell that we're hearing about today throughout the world.
It's yeah. I mean,
so this time it's Muslims.
I want to be cautious. I do want to be cautious to draw parallels to the Holocaust and what's happening today. I think I'll frame it this way: is that a situation doesn't need to be as dire as the Holocaust for us to remember our shared humanity? That when we talk about refugees, we're not talking about faceless hordes of people who are seeking to overrun a country. We're talking about people whose literally lives are at stake. That's what mm-hmm. makes them refugees.
How did a ship with the name St. Louis come to be involved in all of this?
It's an interesting question. I don't actually know. This was just the name of the ocean liner. But one of the interesting things is as the ship is going back and forth and trying to figure it out, there was a point when it went from Cuba to Miami and then was told to go back to Europe and started to go back, but then there was talk they might be able to get back into the Isle of Man, and there were all sorts of things. Along the way, one of the telegrams that these passengers were desperately sending out ended up going to the mayor of St. Louis at the time to try to call for help from even then, and it also went unanswered from what I understand.
Where was the ship registered?
It was a Nazi-registered ship. It was a German-registered liner. It flew under the Nazi flag, and there's an interesting story. The captain of the ship, whose name escapes me right now, was actually one of the heroes in the story because he desperately tried to find not only places for all these refugees, but also on the ship. While they were on the ship, he made sure that his staff treated them with the utmost respect, to the point where they were served the same food that they were served and treated in the exact same way that any other passenger of that ocean liner would be treated, to the point when the Jewish refugees wanted to hold religious services on the ship. They were given the theater, and they were even allowed to cover the bust of Adolf Hitler to be comfortable in the space at the time.
What do we know about what the people were thinking? I guess we can make certain assumptions and probably be pretty accurate, but what do we know through the records from the Holocaust Museum or anyplace else what these people were thinking when all of this was going on?
At which point? On the way to Cuba, on the way back?
Well, I think once they were realizing they were not going to be landing in this hemisphere,
right.
They were going back.
You know, so so what ended up happening when they get back to Europe, the Joint Distribution Committee, which is an organization that still exists today, they did a lot of hard work to try to make sure these refugees were not settled back in Germany. So about 250 or so got settled in Britain, in France, in Belgium, and in the Netherlands. And so each of these and at the time, many people thought, okay, this is okay. They're out of sort of Nazi control. They're safe. And for those who ended up in Britain, all of them but one who died in an air raid ended up being saved, the ones in Britain. The ones who were stuck on the continent of Germany as the war progressed and as these territories were occupied by the Nazis, like I said, about half of those ended up falling back under. So as much as it's hard to say, because on the one hand, there were still some countries who opened up their doors, but it ended up ultimately not – you know, it's a black mark, I think, on our country.
Well, they went right back into cataclysm
yeah.
that was to come because
Correct.
These countries that they went to were overtaken by the Nazis
Correct.
Sooner or later. Is the message throughout on the tweets that I have seen simply, I am so-and-so and I was murdered by the
Yeah, it was a very straightforward sort of thing. Again, we put this together on Thursday night over the course of basically 2 hours. I mean, we saw an opportunity to stand up and to try to add to the conversation. And that was just sort of our goal. Like, what voice can we add to this in this particular moment that will be poignant, that may help in some small way? And that was the idea. So in that way, the tweets were very sparse, were very delineated, although what's been really fascinating has been the emails we've received from people, people who are family members of some of the victims who were there or survivors asking for more information or sharing other stories about it. It's been really powerful to see that element of it and to see the sort of project spin off in ways that we didn't expect.
Where do you take it from here? I mean, this has gotten way ahead of you, I suspect, if you've got these millions of people who are now familiar with it.
Well, the feed finished its 250-some-odd tweets late Friday evening, and it's been silent since then. And, you know, I go back to work today. And I'm just, you know, I've said, it's like, I'm a regular guy. I mean, it's like the folks we had on earlier, they're activists in the community and they're doing the really important work in terms of work. But my job is just to write software. And so, you know, I saw an opportunity to stand up and make my voice heard. And I think that if people really mean the words they say when they say never again, and if people really mean the words they say when they say we remember, that they need to stand up and act where appropriate and where they can.
But clearly you've tapped into something.
You know,
I can't believe it's just going to stop.
You know, it's look, if I see opportunities for myself to sort of stand up again and to speak up, I'm going to do so. But it's you know, I think the story, it's like I really, I want to emphasize that I'm a regular guy here. This is my day job is not activism. My day job is not this particular thing. I've been blessed that my employer sort of gave me the time to come on here and to answer media queries over the last couple of days. But, you know, I fully expect my 15 minutes of fame to end this week. And God willing, someone else will pick it up next week.
People who want to follow this, what can they do?
They can follow it on Twitter at @STL_manifest, and they can see the tweets there. And that's the best way to do it.
You're obviously impressed by your own success in this thing. Unexpected success,
very
aren't
much
you?
So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, congratulations to you for what you've done.
Thanks
you've
so
awakened
much.
a lot of people to a story that needs to be told and we need to be reminded of.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I think of that phrase, nie wieder, never again.
Yeah.
This will help that. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for amplifying.
It's Russell Neese. Thank you. Thanks. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/STLonAir. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.